Welcome back to the Getting Grit podcast. I am Brad Pohl, your host, and this is where we tell the stories of sinners and saints. Hebrews 11:1 reads, "Now faith is the assurance, or as one might say, the title and the deed, of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen." How much faith would you put into the hands of another man? Would you trust him with your life, the life of your family, your fortune? Once upon a time, there was a very rich man who loved to fish, almost as much as he loved any other thing in his life. After all, he was a very rich man. He heard one day about a rare piece of land in Alaska, the choicest ground along the choicest river where the salmon and steelhead migrated in great numbers. If a man owned this piece of land that was for sale, it would be of great treasure. So the rich man summoned his business manager, gave him power of attorney, his signature, access to his bank account, and sent him to buy the land. When the business manager returned with a title and deed, the rich man told his wife, "I will be going there soon to see this land for myself." His wife asked him, "Well, what do the pictures look like that your business manager took?" He answered her, "I have never been to the land nor seen a picture. I've only heard the great stories about it, and I trusted that they were true. I don't know why I trusted. It wasn't emotional. It just seemed to come from the very depth of my being, like it was calling me to trust. And I cannot wait to go and see it for myself." So how many people bought property sight unseen during the pandemic? You know, airlines fly at 400 to 500 miles per hour, at 40,000 feet above the earth, and you have no oxygen up there, no parachute, as if it would matter, but you still enjoy flying. Parents put their children on buses for school every day, or they walk or ride a bike. Who watches over them besides their guardian angels? So every man has faith in something. It could be as tall as a redwood or as miniature as a marshmallow. But nevertheless, men exercise to certain limits faith. But where does it lead them? And it grows in different ways in different men. I ran into a man named Merlin, and he shared with me a story that I will never forget. This is part one.
In California, I like to say I was raised by outlaws and heathens. My dad was a member of an outlaw motorcycle gang. And my mom was a self-professed good witch. I had a non-standard upbringing, even by California standards. My mom and dad took a lot of pride in being the non-traditional people that they were. And I, as a kid growing up in a household like that, thought that that was fairly normal. There wasn't anything unusual to me or to my sister, other than the fact that we didn't see many other families that lived like we lived. I had no religious upbringing. So I wasn't really exposed to any church service, any formal religious practice of any kind. Church for me was a group of 20 leather-clad motorcycle club members showing up for church on Sundays where they would get together for club business in my living room. It wasn't until I went to high school, where I went to a Jesuit high school for 2 years, that I was first exposed to religious practice. In fact, my dad always referred to religion as something that was, you know, practiced by weirdos and crazy people. I would say that my family was spiritual, but not religious in any traditional sense. So when I went to high school, this Jesuit high school, this was the first time that I had any exposure to any kind of religion. But more importantly, it was my first exposure to anything truly spiritual, not the woo, I feel the universe looking out for me, but more the actual experience of the presence of the Holy Spirit. So when I was in high school, we went on a Kairos retreat. And this was the point in my life where I was still thinking that religion was for weirdos and crazies. And as part of this religious retreat, we were invited to do a lot of prayerful reflection. And this is a group of young men led by group of priests on this Kairos retreat. And I just went because my friends were going, and it was like the cool thing to do while you're in high school. You get to get away from school for a little bit. But while I was there, it was the first time that I had felt a sense of spiritual peace. And It was probably the environment, and it was probably being disconnected from everything else that allowed me to feel that. But I had what I would then describe, and I describe now, as an experience of being visited by the Holy Spirit. I felt this sense of peace and being in touch with something beyond myself. Of course, you come back from that and you get back into the regular day-to-day world and life, and you start explaining away the experience that you had. Going, well, it was just the retreat. It was just that we were in the woods. It was just that we spent a lot of time meditating. There wasn't anything that really happened there. Kind of talk yourself out of it. And from then on, I went to UC Santa Barbara, where there was no strong religious presence in my life at the time. I wasn't moving in any of those circles. And so that aspect of my life lay dormant. I was studying acting. There are kind of two paths for an actor when you're graduating from undergrad and completing your program. One is that you go and you start trying to act professionally. And the other is you go and you get a master's degree. UC Santa Barbara, in years past, had sent several actors to the Yale School of Drama, which was the premier acting school in the world. There are basically three top acting schools, certainly at the time, were the Yale School of Drama, NYU, and Juilliard. On a whim, I said, hey, I'm going to go and apply to grad school too. I had to go to a place that was going to pay my tuition at least. And Yale had an endowment. You take out a $6,000 loan your first year, and then they pay room and board for and tuition for your full 3 years. So a full ride if you get admitted for all students. I said, this is a funny joke, isn't it? I'm going to apply to Yale. Just one. Basically just one grad school. There was a handful of other schools that I had applied to, but they were none of them were the big name schools. So we go for our day of auditions, and you prepare two monologues to go on audition, and they tell you you want to have two more in your back pocket, and maybe you want to have a fifth one just in case. So a total of five monologues and a song, but they're probably only going to ask to see two. Well, I go in for my Yale audition, and I do my two monologues, and the auditor says, do you have any more? And so I present a third monologue, and he says, do you have any more? And so I present a fourth monologue, and he says, do you have any more? And I go, my goodness, I am sure glad I prepared all five of these. Yes, I do. Here we go. And so he says, thank you very much. And I walk out of the room, and then they have end of hour callbacks where everybody that they like, they call them back again. And I get called back. And then they have end of day callbacks where they call back everybody that they like from all of their end of hour sessions. And I get called back. And then the next step is they call you back. They fly you out to New Haven to complete an audition with other potential future members of your class. And I get called back. Now, I said I applied to a handful of other grad schools. None of them called me back, just Yale. And so again, I'm not religious at the time. But even then, something told me, you might want to listen up now. If the doors just keep opening and opening and opening, I'm going to keep stepping through them. And so I remember getting onto the plane for my audition, my trip to New Haven, where I was going out for my audition. And I didn't know how to pray, but I said, God, if you're there, I'm hearing you. You're opening these doors, and I'm going to keep walking through them. And so I did. I went out and I auditioned in New Haven. And I thought, surely this is the end. This was a good, fun ride, but this is when the dream, you wake up from the dream and it's not going to happen. And then I got a call and they invited me to come to Yale. And so all of that time that I had this doubt and uncertainty led to this moment where I was stepping into faith. And I was having faith that the path that I was on, that it was that next step that was being illuminated for me. And while I was at grad school, I met this beautiful, Nordic, amazing goddess of a woman. And I fell in love, and we started dating while we were in grad school, my now wife, Hannah. And that was another journey of faith. We did three plays together before we fell in love. And during that third play, I started having feelings for her and basically let her know that I had feelings for her. And she was in a relationship at the time. And she said, I'm sorry, I'm unavailable. And so I had to grapple with that. But I just felt this calling to be with her. And I was like, I'm not going to give up on this. I am committed to, I don't know what, but I am committed to this. And eventually that relationship that she was in ended. And she said, okay. And an amazing thing happened as part of this journey, because you start to form an idea. We make these plans. We men make these plans of how our life is going to go. And so I, at this point, I got a little proud. You know, I'm thinking I got into Yale And that means something. And now I'm going to have an MFA from Yale, the best grad school in acting in the country, in the world. So certainly when I graduate now, they're going to roll out the red carpet. I'm going to waltz into these auditions and they're going to say, thank you so much for applying. We're so happy that you're here. Is there anything we can get for you? And it could not have been farther from the truth. Right after graduation, what happens is they take all of the acting students out and you audition for industry professionals. And you're looking to either get the attention of a casting director or get an agent or get a manager. And I was lucky enough to get signed with a manager who was out in Hollywood, which I knew was where I wanted to go back to California. Hannah and I both resolved that we were going to Hollywood to continue our careers. And so I got this agent, or this manager, excuse me. And we took some time getting back out to California, getting married, and we moved down to Los Angeles and I'm going out on a couple of auditions. And then my manager drops me, says, hey, I'm done. We're done. Good luck. And as an actor, that's a big problem because essentially what agents did in the industry is they created a role for themselves and then made themselves mandatory. So much so that you can't get auditions without representation in a lot of instances. Doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter where you've come from. If you want to get into most audition rooms, you have to be represented. So him dropping me basically mean I no longer had access to these audition rooms. And I was trying everything under the sun. I was calling casting directors and saying, I want to get in and I want to get in front of you. I'm an actor. I was calling agents and saying, you don't even have to sign me. You just have to put my name onto that audition sheet. And I'll tell you what, I'll pay you a commission if I land the job. And if I don't, then you won't ever hear from me again. And people are saying to me on the phone, nobody does this. People don't do business this way. But I was desperate. And the red carpet that I thought was going to be rolled out just wasn't. I had had some small part-time work here and there. I had done regional theater work, but it was in the same way that auditioning for Yale felt like all these doors were opening and opening and opening. Once I got out into the industry and tried to start working, it felt like the opposite was happening. Like these doors were getting slammed shut. And I had this small moment of epiphany where I remembered that moment on the plane and I thought, okay, God, what are you telling me now? And I had this dawning realization when I asked the question that it was as though he was saying, you got what you went to Yale to get. You found it. You married her. Now go and do something else. We were running a little acting studio at the time. And so we were teaching acting classes to people who were in Hollywood. Our start was great. We had a wonderful little cadre of students and it was paying our bills and it was a great little acting studio. And then we had a little bit of student attrition. So now we were at break even, but we weren't making any money. So Hannah, my business partner, and I, my business partner and life partner and wife, we sit down together. I lay out the business plan. I say, okay, business partner, here's where we are. And she sits patiently listening to me. And when I finish, she bursts into tears and says, I never wanted to run an acting studio. So I said, I think that we need to shift courses and we're going to need to go and be by family where the cost of living is lower. And we need to start heading towards building the family that we want. Because I am one who I really desire to know definitively. So you earlier before we started recording gave the example of somebody who has been told of this amazing, majestic fishing location up in Alaska. And if I were the buyer of that land, I would want to see the land survey. I would want to see the photos. I would want the real estate agent who's buying it for me to be out there FaceTiming me, showing around. I want to eat some of the fish that allegedly comes from this great fishing location. I have a hard time if I don't really understand, if I haven't seen it, touched it. I would have been the guy saying, I'll believe it when I can see the wounds.
Where will Merlin and Hannah end up? This is not just some story, except that it is a story about faith, which makes it altogether a different kind of story. A good story, one that only one man and one woman could tell. And when it is repeated by others so that you may be encouraged of their great faith, it becomes just like your own story, a blessing for many. Because all good stories are worth listening to. Come and join us next week for the conclusion. This is Getting Grit signing off. Blessings to you all. Dominus vobiscum.